Niners made a home stand against the Detroit Lions, who stormed out of the traps to take a 17-point lead into the half. The Niners, however, remembered in the second half that they have the league's most formidable collection of explosive playmakers. We got a thrilling game in Levi's Stadium, Colm. Let's start at the beginning. The Lions really answered the bell. Like, they're landing deep, you know, big shots all over the Niners. Jameson Williams bursts in for a touchdown. They're two scores up before you know where you are. The run game's showing up big. Ben Johnson seems to have schemed up the perfect plan to knock the Niners on the back foot. And they're getting defensive stops. All of it was going exactly to plan.
Yeah, and what you'd say is they were using, it was like judo, they were using their opponent's strengths against them. They knew that Nick Bosa is a heat-seeking missile. They knew he'd look to get the ball, and they hid the ball from him. Nick Bosa went one way, and Jameson Williams went the other. I will point out, Chase Young, buddy, you are out of contract in a few weeks. Who is going to give you the type of money that you're looking for? I mean, for the 49ers, they rolled the dice in him, but my goodness, he just looks completely disinterested. On a team where everybody is busting a gut, like the best players, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Bosa, George Kittle, every single player is putting it in. He looks like he'd prefer to be anywhere else.
We talked about him getting handled by Dontavian Wicks when they played the Packers last week. And, you know, if that doesn't wake you up, nothing will. But he was just a no-show. I'd actually forgotten he was playing for the 49ers at one point.
Oh, watch the touchdown and watch his lack of effort. Like, he just saunters across the pitch. It's like watching the old, do you remember the Mr. Soft Dad, the mint, where the guy is walking around? That's how he is. And such a stark contrast to the entirety of the rest of the defense and the rest of the team. For the Lions, it opened exactly the way in which they would have wanted it to open, and everything looked kind of absolutely fantastic up until right towards kind of we came up to the end of halftime.
Brian, talk to us about what happened next, because
deep breaths. What happened next?
Part of me thinks that you can only keep the 49ers quiet for so long. I mean, the Packers look to have dialed up a perfect plan the previous week. And you limit the explosive plays. You run the ball down their throats. You get the turnovers, which the Lions did. The Packers didn't. And that, you know, we talked about how critical that was in that game against Green Bay. Darnell Savage dropped one as one that will haunt the Packers. The Lions get the turnover. They capitalize on the turnover. They had the 49ers exactly where they wanted. But to be fair, they made the adjustments at halftime. And when they got rolling, I mean, they had the ball, they had the ball five times in the second half. They scored on every single possession.
They did, but at the same time, you got to look at the time that was taken off the clock to do that. And I'd start with the opening drive of the second half. Eight plays, and they take a large chunk off the clock. It only results in a field goal. A field goal that just about went over. Like, Moody, for me, is a bit of, like, we've seen him miss in Cleveland. We saw the one in the first half. He's a flight risk for me going to the Super Bowl in terms of the game and the pressure's on when he can make it.
Just at the end of our picks last week, I'm very nervous about a team with a dodgy kicker going into the playoffs. They've gotten away with that a couple of times.
You did, yeah. It was really called out, and I still think that's a big concern going to the game. The next drive that the Lions go on, another comprehensive drive, Colin touched on it already, to get away from Bosa. They run continuously on the Niners defense, which really over the course of the game couldn't really stop them until later on in the game, which they kind of got to grips with them. By and large, you know, the running game was really effective. Gives Montgomery a much better game. And then we get to the situation, and look, like, this isn't a shutdown on Campbell, because I know everyone has a mixed opinion on this today, so I'm going to give my Tuppence order. Right? So there's six or seven
minutes left. I'm just rooting around for my Tuppence here, Brian, because I know your Tuppence is different from my Tuppence.
Okay, well, look, all season long he's gone for fourth down. Okay, so I get the nature. Okay, so he's going to come out of this game now as, oh yeah, that's the aggressive head coach. Well, he should be coming out of this game as, oh, that's the Super Bowl head coach as opposed to the aggressive head coach. If they made that fourth down play, because this is all about analytics, isn't it? It's all about stats and all this information that we're fed every day of the week when an NFL game is on. If they made that fourth down play, to win the game, there it was 90.8% that they would win the game if they kicked the field goal, which was a 40-yard field goal. Basley is 3 for 3 over the course of the season, 40 in. Okay, so he's got a 100% record. Okay, they're 21 of 40. I gave him a disservice last night. I said they were 42% on fourth down. They were 50%. So it's a 50-50 shot as opposed to a kicker who is 100% on his kicks. So anyway, the percentage rate of them winning the game with making that field goal, 90.3%. But again, he decided that he wanted to get away from that. The next piece I would say about this scenario is, if he goes up by 17 points with 6 minutes left in the third quarter, okay, so we're talking about 21 minutes of football to go, they have to score 3 times. So effectively, for me, takes away the run game, because now all of a sudden Purdy has to pass. They can't continue to run. They're going to eat the clock. So now they're in a position where Purdy, over the course of the first half in particular, was getting pressed on because the Lions from 5, in fairness, were getting to him quite a lot. The pressure was on. For me, that takes away another piece where potentially he could turn the ball over. And then ultimately, for me, it's about momentum. And you go up 17 points, and the momentum is still on your side, despite the opening drive from the 1400s. You've rebounded. You've taken a field goal. But look, it is what it is. He's done it all season long. I can't say I agree with it. The one later on, I felt he should have kicked it as well. And we're talking about a championship game with an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. I'll hand it back just.
I'm going to make the counterpoint here, because exactly, we're talking about a championship game, and you mentioned momentum there. We literally just said the 49ers scored on every single possession. The strength of the Lions is your offense. This team that does not have a good defense. Their special teams, as we talked about, the kicker, Badgley, is good from over 40 yards. He's not nails. You don't have Harrison Butker here or Justin Tucker. There's no such thing as 100% kick, certainly not in the playoffs.
Campbell, in my opinion, was right
because first one of those kicks goes over, you go to overtime. That's not the way for the underdog to win. Wins on the road by taking the shots, taking the sevens when you can get to seven, pushing for seven when you can get seven, rather than settling for three. And I think you go with no regrets if you do what Campbell did. And I don't quite understand why he's being slated for that. I think the other thing is, if all season long you've been putting the ball in Jared Goff's hands and leaving your offense out in the field and going for it on fourth down, if you suddenly in the championship game decide not to do that, I think you shatter the confidence in your offense, which is, as I said, the strength of this team. That's what they do. Like, at least they went out in their shields doing what they've done all season long. It was a football loss for me. I think people are assuming, firstly, all the kicks are guaranteed to go over. We just talked about how Jake Moody missed one from 43. You're asking Badgley to hit from 45 and 47 with all the pressure on him. Even if you get to overtime, like we've seen that movie play out a number of times, one of the two AFC championship games that Patrick Mahomes lost, you lose the coin toss, you lose the game before you even get back on the field, especially against a team with the kind of explosive offense that the Niners had. They're rolling at that point. Whatever about the first kick, the second time they go for it on fourth down, he's looking at that 49ers team and he's looking at his own defense going, we can't stop these guys. We need to pile up as many points as we can or we're not going to Vegas.
Can I make one more point before Colin comes back in? They couldn't stop them over the course of the second half. But at that stage, they'd only had the ball once in the second half and it resulted in a field goal. He also would have then needed 3 scores. They would have had to score 3 times. And if you look at the clock and the measurement of the game, Lions realistically probably would have got the ball back 3 times. So the Lions could have went and scored again. So you would have put a position where they would have had to get to 34 or 35 points to beat. That's a hard task. Bearing in mind you're already 17 points down. We are where we are.
Hang on. Badgley hasn't kicked outdoors. Not kicked outdoors all season. Badgley hasn't kicked outdoors since 2022. Badgley, in between 40 and 49, is just over 76% in his career. The Lions have converted 80% of their 4 and 3 or less this year. 80%. San Francisco has allowed 71.4% of their 4 and 3 or less this year. Right? So the Lions are fourth best. 49ers are 28th. But that's all stats. Dan Campbell didn't talk about stats at all. If you watch what he said, Dan Campbell talked about the reason he went for it is he places huge value in trust and in his players and them believing in it. He also wanted to keep the 49ers off the field. Like if Reynolds And he should have caught that ball. And the Lions have issues in that Jared Goff is terrible under pressure for the most part, right? And that they have got to figure out that if they're going to give him a big contract extension. But that might be the one play where Goff actually does well with it. He feels the pressure coming. He steps up. He makes the throw. And ultimately, Reynolds cannot get it done. And that was... like
criticized for the throw column in certain media outlets today. I'm only making the point. I don't agree with you.
The ball is there. Ayuk had to scoop it off the ground, inches off the ground from Purdy last week. To me, I totally understand the call. This is the way Dan Campbell plays. I think in the biggest moments, having a coach willing to it is the antithesis of what Staley would have done, who would have absolutely turtled, who would have looked at it and would have gone away from it. Did it work? No. Ultimately, but Reynolds was open. The play call was good. It was the receiver who let them down. If you get that, you take another 2.5 minutes off the clock from the 49ers, very likely, no matter what, right? Because you're going to run the three plays. And I understand it. You want to go for it. My criticism of Dan Campbell, if it is to exist, is not going for it at the half. He should have gone for it every time. If he gets it there and they go into the half up by 21. And again, to me, there was
that one's an interesting one to me though, Colin, because I think that shows I've criticised Dan Campbell's play calling at times and criticised some decisions that he's made, including leaving the starters out in the final game of the season leading to Sam Laporta's injury, which wasn't the smartest thing he's ever done. But that one before halftime, I think, goes to show that he's not an outright gambler, right? I think the argument there from an analytics point of view is 49ers are getting the ball after halftime. You know that for a fact. So if you go for it and you don't make it, you got no points and the 49ers cut a 2-possession lead to a 1-possession lead. You go for it on fourth down when you're that close to the end zone with more time on the clock, and at least you're pinning back the opponents on their own goal line. Right? You're making it difficult for them to come. But that was a non-factor there. So I think there was a slight argument in favor of guarantee yourself to 17, because that was a cheap chip shot field goal for Michael Badgley or for anyone else. You guarantee yourself to 17 points and you guarantee you have a 3-possession lead going into the half, knowing that the Niners get the ball back. But, as you say, it's very makeable as well. And I wonder, is that the one that they look at and go, they're bound to get one of the three if they'd gone for it all three times. That might have been the one.
And also, to get away from this conversation, because I think there's merits to both sides. Whether we all agree or not is always one thing. As I like to say, situational football, and sometimes the conservative approach for me is better. The last drive, at this stage, I think the game was probably over, but The collar run play, that's on Ben Johnson today, because it's not on Dan Campbell. You're in a situation where you need to keep those timeouts. You need those three timeouts, because that last timeout gone eventually was the one that allowed the 49ers to run it down. Obviously, 1 second. He calls a run play. It reminded me of the Giants in Buffalo on that crazy drive before halftime where they called an audible and they went to Saquon. Same scenario, he called an audible.
An onside kick, you've got to try and preserve your timeouts and hope that you can get a defensive stop, which is much likelier than recovering an onside kick.
Absolutely. So, you should have been saying Johnson, I don't care what circumstance, we're not going out on the sword here. Cough, dial in four throws into the end zone and make sure the clock is getting stopped after each of them. We can't have a scenario where we're giving away a timeout, because essentially, even if we score here, the game is pretty much gone. We're in a scenario with the three timeouts. Who knows? They couldn't have got the ball back. It probably would have been a big ask to get into field goal range at that stage. But still, that's just another killer.
Colin, talk to us about the Purdy performance, because I think whether you're a Purdy believer or a Purdy detractor, I don't think either side claimed a complete victory from this one. Purdy was good when he was good, but man, he also had some very shaky moments. I don't know if heading into Vegas, I'm still not sure if this is a guy you want under center.
Oh, no, Connor. No. Ryan Clark says Purdy has separated himself from Dak. He separated himself from Justin Herbert. Oh, he's much better. Look, again, I cannot believe the discourse around Purdy is a good player. But this should be...
I don't know if any other quarterback McCollum can bank a ball off a defender's helmet into the outstretched arms of his best wide receiver in a crucial spot. Like, you show me anyone else that can make that joke.
There are players that you look back on when you're watching America's game 9 months later, Con, and say, oh, that was a play when we knew we were going to win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
As opposed to the quarterback, sorry.
And the escape the one on the line. But, no, Brock Purdy should be an incredible story. This actually should be the guy we're all rooting for, right? To go from the last pick to what he has done, overcoming the injuries, an incredible season. Because the discourse means that, like, you have to go with him being the bestest player in the world. Like, people want to talk about him as if he is Tom Brady, as if he's Joe Montana. That's really out there. Like, this is insane. Could he become Tom Brady? Sure. It's a long, long way to go, but the need to anoint him as that, and if you don't, you're some sort of hater.
Sorry, Colin. If they're gonna win the Super Bowl, they need him to be Tom Brady, because lest we forget, only two quarterbacks have ever beaten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, and one of them is Joe Burrow, and the other one is Tom Brady.
Yeah, there is that, but like, I just don't understand the need. And so, like, yes, we live in this super connected world now where, and you have to have the hot takes, you have to have immediate takes. But I think Brock Purdy is a good player. I think he can make brilliant plays. We saw that on display. I think at other times he can make absolutely boneheaded decisions. And I think at other times he gets lucky. But you know what? Everybody gets lucky. Do you know who got lucky in 28-3? Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, when he made an incredible catch. So luck plays a part of it. Can we, like, we don't need to say that Brock Purdy is elite. Joe Flacco had an amazing playoff run with the Ravens. They won a Super Bowl. Did that mean that Joe Flacco was the equal of Joe Montana? That he was the equal of Tom Brady? Is Nick Foles, should we put Nick Foles on the Mount Rushmore?
I've seen Sexy Rexy take the Bears to a Super Bowl, one that they narrowly lost. Of course, as you say, Jeff Hostetler, Nick Foles, like, Joe Flacco, they're all out there.
Like, it goes too far. Like, and it's immediate. Like, last year, Jalen Hurts had an incredible season. Right, this year Jalen Hurts had a poor season. I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle there. I think I really like Jalen Hurts as a QB and as a person, but I don't think Jalen Hurts is Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert. I think he's a good QB. So to me, I just think, can we just watch this play out? Can we enjoy Brock Purdy for what he is? Can we enjoy the 49ers for what they are without the need to say, this is it. This kid has it. He's him. He's Brady. He's Montana. He's Elway. He's everything rolled into one.
Brian, looking at that game, you know, you can talk about incredible one-handed grab that Juwan Jennings makes. IU comes up with a couple of spectacular plays. Debo Samuel had a couple of great plays. Christian McCaffrey was doing Christian McCaffrey things. For me, somebody who deserves to be highlighted is Nick Bosa, who I thought, particularly in the second half, was amazing and stepped up in a massive way. He was more or less a non-factor in the first half, but when the Niners needed him, he was there.
Yeah, absolutely. The first half, Colin called it out earlier in terms of Goff's numbers when he's not pressured, they're fantastic, but ultimately when he's under pressure, the numbers dwindle and drop down significantly, and that's what happened over the course of the second half, and primarily down to the fact that Bosa finally kind of was making life difficult for the offensive line, and then obviously Goff in particular. Like, there's some stats today around his numbers in the first half, as opposed to when the pressure was on and Bosa was really interfering. And again, we've got the turnover again. We haven't even touched on that. Like, once we can chew the fat over if you miss field goal or not taking field goal or whatever the scenario is, you know, they still go down and score a touchdown. The Lions are still in the position to go and win the game. They're getting the ball back, and obviously to me, that was probably more so a turning point in the sense of short field, opportunity to score and tie the game up so quickly. But again, that was all down to the defense. And mostly the defense came up good in the fourth quarter. It came up good last week as well at times with two interceptions with Greenlaw. And you're right, like, Bosa is the leading light going into the Super Bowl. And this is, as Colin said, this is the game, this is the team that they've built up, that this is the moment for them to win the Super Bowl. And in 2 weeks, seen before with Von Miller, like, is it against the realms possibility that he takes over the game and becomes the MVP? Not in the million years, but I consider a defense player not to be in the running for this, because this Chiefs offense isn't the offense of old. And if they can dominate the way they did in the second half at times, it could be a difficult night for the Chiefs. It's going to be a great game in 2 weeks.
Colin, Lions wise though, and I thought, you know, Leisha's making the point there again in the comments, Dan Campbell in the post-conference presser was everything you expect Dan Campbell to be. He was thoughtful, he was emotional, but it was interesting to hear him talk about, because, you know, as a player, Brian will remember well, he played for the Giants in a Super Bowl that they lost. That was his only time getting to the big game, and he's repeatedly emphasized it to the Lions players. You don't know how hard it is to win playoff games in this league. You should be proud of yourselves. You never know when you're going to get a shot like this. And he said himself, it's possible that this could be the only time we get this far. I don't think that's going to be the case, but that's the way I wanted the players to approach it. And to be fair, we've talked about it as from a coaching perspective, whether you agreed with him or not, he certainly left it all out there and won't die wondering about the choices he made. It's a tough road back, though. Like, we talked about it last year from an Eagles perspective when they got all the way to the Super Bowl. A lot of people were saying, yeah, they're nailed on to run it back, but it's so, so difficult. And it ain't getting any easier, particularly in that NFC North, now that we've seen the full range of what Jordan Love and that Packers team can do. You wonder where the Vikings will be. Bears could be playing with the number one overall pick in the draft, or with a clutch of upgraded weapons around Justin Fields. All of that makes it more and more difficult for the Lions to get back. Got to capitalize on your opportunities when they come your way. Maybe getting to the championship game is no disgrace for that Lions team, but they'll want more.
Yeah, no, look, you get this far, and as you said, you want to go further, but more than that, like, it was there. This was not a team who were, you know, absolutely blown out. This was not the Eagles beatdown of the Vikings when they went to win the Super Bowl. Or as we've seen, when it's so clear that, like, no matter what you did on the particular day, it wasn't going to be it for you. So to me, like, there are many moments they can point to, and yeah, we've talked a lot about the fourth down, but like Gibbs's the fumble, the overthrow to Laporta, the fact that Goff struggled when the pressure was put on him. They'll all have, you know, look back on it. I do think Ben Johnson will end up getting a job. I mean, I think it will be Bill Belichick ultimately who misses out when, you know, the game musical chairs comes to an end. And if that is the case, then it will change it, right? Because when an offensive coordinator moves on, very likely he takes one or two of the other guys with him. What does that do for the Lions? I would hope that they aren't going to go the route of just going with the quarterback coach. It will be tough, but look, they have shown an ability to draft really well. And I don't think that their team was quite on the same level defensively as the 49ers.
To your point, Colin, this is kind of the killer. It's where you get punished for progressing too far in the playoffs almost. If Ben Johnson, as everybody expects, leaves to get a head coaching job, most of the good offensive coordinators have already been hired.
Yeah, though again, like I think you can search around. I just don't think you go with the obvious answer. Like, to me, that's what the Eagles did last year. That's what the Bills did with Dorsey, and that didn't work out. Dan Campbell seems the sort who puts a lot of thought into it and who will go searching. If you were to have a hope,
it's another bloke, Bobby Slowick, out there somewhere, right? You don't necessarily have to go for an obvious play caller.
That's the thing. I think that people will want to work with Dan Campbell. The question, though, of course, is around Goff, and you know, how is he, like, is his ceiling good enough to win a Super Bowl? We've seen it when everything is right. It can take you to a Super Bowl. It can take you to a championship game. But like, can he get you over the hump ultimately? They're fascinating, right? They've been building towards this. Can they continue?
No, we touched on this already. If Mr. Irrelevant wins the Super Bowl, people are going to be rooting around for quarterbacks in the draft like somebody looking for a Nokia charger in the bottom of the drawer in their kitchen.
Yes. Look, it's copycat league, and but it again, it shows, I suppose, that you need to be potentially the best of the best in Patrick Mahomes, or you need to have a QB on that rookie contract.
Brian,
it kind of strikes me, and it's Max Patrick Mahomes as to whether he ought to be in the Super Bowl. It strikes me as that kind of Alex Smith Patrick Mahomes type scenario, which the Lions would be looking to the danger where they're picked second in the draft is not probably going to help them. But like Lamar Jackson went to 32, you know, so it doesn't necessarily mean you won't get the right quarterback. But it strikes me as a team right now, because where would he go outside of Goff? If Goff understands the system, he understands the foundation of what the team are trying to build. It strikes me they need to find a quarterback that can come in, understand the nature of what's involved in working for Dan Campbell, and then ultimately take over from Goff at some stage. But there is a talk of a contract for Goff this offseason, so it'll be interesting to see how much they invest in that. I don't think it'd be an upper level contract, so I wouldn't even suggest it'd be that crazy $40 million tag that we've spoken about before with the likes of Daniel Jones and other various different quarterbacks that are looking at those numbers now. But yeah, it looks to me they have to find a way. They tried with various different opportunities with quarterbacks, but it hasn't.
To be fair to Goff, how unfortunate would he be not to get the contract? Matthew Stafford didn't win playoff games in Detroit. And he had Megatron to throw to.
Oh, well, that's true, but it's a different time. This team is, like, he had Megatron, but he didn't have very little else around him. And in fairness to the Lions, they've got a very attack-minded team with two really strong running backs to help him fend off the need to be continuously throwing. He's got various different outlets in terms of a great, you know, like, Holmes has done a fantastic job in terms of the players. Laporta coming in, they were suggesting he was too high in the second round that he touched on last week. You've got a Gibbs running back.
Fix the defense. One stop and you're in the Super Bowl. One stop in the second half.
I think that would primarily have to be the focus this offseason. I don't know what their cap situation is in terms of looking over the cap. I'm sure like the numbers can be fudged, as we keep saying with teams. And Colin called it last week, where the Bucks been $80 million over, they make the playoffs. The Saints always seem to find themselves in cap hell, yet they're competitive the following season. So I think there'll be players that they can pick up on certain deals. I think one thing I would be good for them is they can attract players in. It's not about just going and taking the dime or taking the cash. You know, people will want to go play for them. I'm sure players that are going into free agency will be asking the question of Lions players that would say no. What's he like to work for? Exactly. So this is the thing. But ultimately, it's about getting it right defensively, because over the course of the season, we've seen so many high-scoring games and they've come out the right side of many of the balls. Ultimately, they've fallen short and someone fell short in this one in the end.
We'll see who does go all the way in just 2 weeks' time. But before we go, a reminder that if you'd like to join the Irish NFL show for our live event on March 28th, that's Holy Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, with NBC's Peter King in association with our partners Quinbet, Rewpoint, and the Aer Lingus College Football Classic, please click the link. You'll find that on at IRENFL on X or at IRENFL show on Instagram. Our social channels there have all the information that you're going to need for that one. As we said, we're going to be heading to Vegas for the Super Bowl. Colin will be right there from opening night. We'll have plenty of exclusive content all the way through. We'll have interviews, we'll have commentary, we'll have picks and previews and all that good stuff coming at you, and plenty more content to come between now and then as well on the Irish NFL show.